Report with former FBI Chief Ted L. Gunderson. To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, it's 1-303-654-9924. And now, here's Ted.
And good morning, all you beautiful, wonderful people across this great land of ours. It's great to be alive. And we have, as usual, he's getting to be a regular on this show, Gene Chip Tatum, 25-year deep cover CIA agent. And we'll get to Chip in just a minute. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about drugs and Mexico. You know, the president's going to be visiting Mexico on Monday, as a matter of fact. And there's an article in the Dallas Morning News today, and it's captioned, Clinton rethinking certification options. He wants to avoid congressional fight over Mexico's cooperation in the drug war. And, of course, the House International Relations Committee voted Wednesday to abolish the certification program and give the president authority to impose optional sanctions on countries that allow money laundering and protection or trafficking of illegal drugs. Now, going through this article, Mr. Clinton did not call for abolishing the current system, but he said he asked aides to try and get knowledgeable people in Congress from both parties to really take a hard look at this and make a bipartisan recommendation. By the way, this interview and this article is based on an interview with the president by the Dallas Morning News and two other newspapers, so it's an exclusive for three newspapers. Quoting the president, you don't want to do something which appears on the surface to be tough, but actually undermines the ultimate objective. The ultimate objective is to reduce the volume of drugs coming into the United States. I got news for you, Mr. Clinton. You can reduce the amount of drugs coming into the United States through a number of means. First of all, you can get a hold of your folks over at the CIA office who are part of the shadow government, and you can tell them to knock it off, and you can take sanctions against them. And you're picking on Mexico, and the biggest drug dealer in the world, number one drug dealer and the number one terrorist in the world is the CIA. Well, here's some suggestions for you, Mr. President. You can set up ground-penetrating radar to detect tunnels, and of course, in so doing, you're going to obviously have problems, with your own people, those who are corrupt and who deserve to be exposed and prosecuted, but we can always look the other way on that. Let's go after the Mexicans who are not involved with the CIA. Also, you can set up surveillance radar on top. The ground-penetrating radar will detect tunnels. You can do oceanic points. It can be followed. You can follow the ships. You've got the El Paso Intelligence Center, which is the aerial radar. You've got spy satellites. You can divert one of those from the 500 miles in space to put a complete radar shield on the border. You can set up field stations, secret listening stations throughout the world. You've got the NSA and the National Security Agency right now tapping phones all over the world, monitoring overseas calls. Certainly, you could come up with some information there. And, of course, you can put someone to listening for drug conversations, radio intercept, and so on and so forth. Now, you are aware, of course, that the drug czar of the United States is General McCaffrey. And I happen to have a little bit of information about General McCaffrey, which I find would be very interesting. The only problem with my information, it's informant information. I cannot, as a matter of fact, come forward with it at this point. Hopefully, it'll be made public in the future. Chip Tatum, you're there.
Here, I'm here, Ted.
Okay. What do you know about, what do you think about these sanctions and about the president's approach to the drug problem with Mexico? Did you have any contacts with Mexico or Mexican officials when you were with the CIA?
The Salinas brothers are about the only people that we dealt with down there.
And tell us about your association with them.
Well, I didn't have direct association. However, others that were flying out of Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador had spoken about the protected airfields. On one occasion in 1989, I recall at a monitoring site, we had tapes off of Swan Island. We had tapes of over 18 tons of cocaine being flown to a Mexican location in one large operation which involved several of the cartels from Colombia. They overflew Panama, they overflew Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, and flew into Mexico. in excess of 18 tons in one night.
Well, were CIA people involved in that?
We monitored it. We didn't do anything about it.
Well, that's a pretty good answer. So what you're saying is you allowed it to go through.
It was allowed to go through. That's correct.
And what is 18 tons worth on the street? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea.
Must be billions and billions. Maybe it would cover the national debt.
It's a nice retirement fund for someone.
Now, you talked about the Salinas. Were they involved with the CIA in drug operations?
The Salinas were involved in what Barry Seal called the boss hog, on his boss hog list, where he listed government officials around the world who were in fact involved in both Salinas's were on that list. So I would assume that Mr. Seal knew quite a bit about the Salinas's.
Uh-huh. And Barry Seal was, of course, the fellow who was involved with the CIA in drugs and was assassinated in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in what, 1980 what?
1986.
1986, and he knew too much. He had been, as usual, tried and convicted of a crime, and the judge sentenced him over to some safe house where he had absolutely no protection. He came out one night, and he was blown away by the Colombian cartel, I think, wasn't it?
By members of the Colombian cartel. The question is, who co-opted and paid for that hit?
Yes, and the question also is Barry Seal knew too much, right?
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, well, there's two ways of getting rid of you, folks, when you know too much about the shadow government CIA drug operation. One is Chip says, neutralize them, and I say that's just plain murder. And the other way is to set them up and frame them and send them off to jail and discredit them. Usually it's one of the two ways. Chip, you talked yesterday about the operation in Cambodia where you went in on Operation, was it Red Rock? Is that what you called it?
That's right, Operation Red Rock, into the Phnom Penh Airport in Cambodia.
Yeah, now, folks, bear in mind, they were our Alps. Time for a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum, and we were talking about how the CIA neutralizes individuals who know too much. And I'd mentioned Operation Red Rock, which was a raid. 1971 on the Cambodian airport, Chip and others were dressed in North Vietnamese uniforms, and President Nixon gave the order to eliminate them after they finished their mission, and Cambodia being a friendly country. That's the way they deal with people who know too much, right, Chip?
That's correct. Can I take a minute and go down the list of the code names of the men who are on Team Red Rock and what happened to them?
Yes, please do.
There were three killed by friendly fire, U.S. fire. However, I will say on the U.S.'s part, we were dressed in sapper uniforms. They didn't know who we were. There was a United States Air Force colonel who knew who we were but told them that we were the enemy. He was looking for a star. Chief.
Who was that colonel?
He's in the book. I don't know where he is now, but now that I'm out, I would like to start a search and see if I can find him. I'm going to do that behind the lines, if you know what I mean.
Well, you might be able to give him a star, the star he's looking for.
Sure. Chief was an American Indian Green Beret. He was killed by the door guns of a CH-53 Jolly Green Giant at our pickup zone. Cajun was from Louisiana. He was CIA. Cajun was killed by the door guns of that same CH-53 Jolly Green at the pickup zone. Super Cop was from the northeastern U.S., a former naval intelligence officer and current Navy SEAL. He was killed by U.S. F-4 fighters attacking an anti-aircraft artillery site that we had attacked, and they came in and took over and finished the deal. Killed by enemy fire was one called the Kid. He was a Vietnamese-American CIA. His parents he worked in the embassy. The Kid was killed by an NVA patrol as Red Rock crossed an open field. Captured by the North Vietnamese were our platoon sergeant, Mai Wei, a U.S. Army Captain Green Beret. Mai Wei was tortured to death by a Chinese officer. His skin was torn from his body. He died from exposure, shock, and loss of blood. Bagman was U.S. Army Green Beret. Bagman died of wounds received from a Soviet officer's pistol following torture and interrogation. Cowboy was from Texas, a U.S. Army Green Beret. Cowboy was tortured by a Soviet officer and a Chinese officer. He died of suffocation. Flame was a U.S. Army Green Beret. Flame was killed with Cowboy on the torture post by the Soviet and Chinese officers. He was decapitated by a Chinese officer during interrogation. Snake, United States Marines. Snake was tortured and interrogated by Soviet and Chinese officers. Folks, I want you to listen to this. These are Chinese officers now I'm talking about.
And Soviets.
And Soviets. He died by decapitation. Pablo, of Mexican descent, U.S. Navy SEAL, Pablo escaped during torture but was captured, interrogated, and tortured to death by a Soviet officer. Haystack, from Kansas. U.S. Army Green Beret, Haystack was shot in the abdomen by Chinese officers. He died of his wounds only minutes after the U.S. Marine Patrol liberated us and began treating his wounds. It was Haystack's heroism that attracted the Marines' attention to us while we were in captivity. Pop, our platoon sergeant, U.S. Army Green Beret. Pop was wounded in the chest and head by U.S. Marines. The Marine was not aware that Pop was a serviceman, a U.S. serviceman. He may have survived his wounds. He was shipped stateside for emergency medical care. He was in a coma. He had a severe brain swelling. Highway, which was me, a Bulldog, Air Force combat controller, I'm here.
So I'm here and I'm talking. Yeah, and two of you survived, Chip.
Two of us survived. That's great.
Would that be Pop and you?
That's Pop and me.
And Pop, you don't know his full name?
Just Chuck. I know that I have some information that's come in to me from several sources around the U.S. that I'm following up on now.
Okay, what we want to do, Chip, is on the second hour, let's go over that again, because that second hour goes shortwave around the world, and let's give it another shot. And I have been told that the second hour with shortwave and satellite between the two of them, we have an audience of over 3 million people. So we'll review that again on the second hour.
Great.
Okay, now, is there anything more you want to talk about as far as Mexico is concerned and the drugs coming through there?
I don't believe so. I know Mexico is one of the large transshipment points, as is now coming across the northern border of the United States. We're able to fly. Even single-engine aircraft can take off, specially equipped single-engine aircraft take off from Colombia, fly to the Bahamas, rest overnight, wait for a weather window, go up into Nova Scotia, come across to the Weyburn area of Saskatchewan, and then come down into Montana, North Dakota, any of those areas, and drop their drugs.
What about the El Paso Intelligence Center? That's a special setup in El Paso, Texas. I visited there when I was head of the FBI in Dallas in my day, and Art Fleur was the man in charge, a good man with DEA. There are some good folks out there, folks, who have been involved with the government. And anyway, they keep track of all the ships and all the airplanes coming into the United States or coming north from South and Central America, follow them, surveillance, et cetera. What about them? Are they effective anymore, or do you know?
EPIC is only as good as the intelligence given into them.
And did you have anything to do with EPIC?
No, but some confidential informants that I investigated, some people that were on customs staff, that I investigated who were running certain sites around the Caribbean. We're shutting them down and letting aircraft come through so the intelligence never got through to
Okay, time for a quick break, folks. Be right back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Eric Cederstrom for the Patriots. And now, here's Ted.
And we're back, folks. My guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year deep cover CIA operative. Chip, before we go any further, the second hour yesterday's show, many people listening today did not hear that, cannot hear it. By the way, it's on shortwave. If you want to buy a shortwave radio, you can call 1-800-205-6245. You should get it for the second hour every day, ladies and gentlemen. You're missing out on a lot of good, solid intelligence information. But in that second hour yesterday, in order to enlighten the people that did not hear it or listening to this show today, we talked mainly, I'd say the highlight of the hour was we talked about how you were set up on a deal and your wife and you were charged in order to discredit you. Why don't you repeat that for us today for these folks?
Well, that's a typical, when I talk about neutralizations, Ted, we have three techniques we use to neutralize a person. And neutralization is, if you imagine putting a car in neutral and moving it where you want to, well, that's what we do in neutralizations. We can intimidate them, we can coerce them into doing what we want, or we can neutralize them. You know, the coercion portion would be the defamation of character. And that's basically what they wanted to do. They needed, because of the information I have in the Tatum Chronicles and in other documents that I published since then, they need to say that I'm not a credible witness against these particular people, simply because if this information is credible and it comes out, they will go to prison for the rest of their lives.
That's the goal, isn't it?
That's absolutely the goal.
And I'll help you any way I can. Go ahead. Tell us how they set you up.
I was charged initially with a type of fraud making. It's a Title 18 1007. There's been very few prosecutions under it, but it's conspiring to hold back information from the FDIC. They said that I didn't disclose total ownership of the companies that I'd owned. The person who felt heavy in his shoulders because of the terrible deeds that he did walked into the U.S. Attorney's office one day from the blue and said, I want to admit that I conspired with a guy named Tatum to not disclose everything to the United States government. My name is Bill Lusinger. I'm very sorry for not disclosing it. You need to prosecute Mr. Tatum.
And who is his friend that told him to do that?
He's one of Oliver North's campaign managers.
Oh, Ollie North, okay. The hero.
From the United States Marines.
Yeah, the hero from the Marines who was involved in drug dealing. Go ahead.
That's right.
And so the U.S. attorney prosecuted you?
So the U.S. attorney prosecuted me. Our attorneys, since they seized all of our assets, the government, we had no way to pay an attorney, retain an attorney, even though we had friends who were attorneys for years working in other arenas. However, they weren't criminal attorneys. I never needed that before. So we had to depend on public defenders. The public defender's office, they were independent counsel outside of the public defender's office that the U.S. hired. Out of 80 witnesses that we listed for our defense, not one witness was contacted, not one witness was called to provide a defense for us. After the trial was over, Nancy's attorney said in front of my brother, my mother, and a newspaper reporter who had covered the treason charge that I was charged with, he said that he couldn't provide a defense, he couldn't call him because he was told that he'd never work again. He was approached in a bar by some people from the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency.
And the result, of course, is that you were convicted, right?
Result is I was convicted. My new attorney filed a request for release, stating there are some real problems with this conviction. For one thing, he didn't have a real trial. There was no defense. And the appeals court looked at it and said, whoa. So they gave me an immediate release on April 4th after spending 2 years in federal prison.
This is April 4th, just this last month.
That's correct.
And what's the future for you?
We don't know. They could come back down, especially with me doing these programs. They could come back down tomorrow and say, or this afternoon, throw the cuffs on and say, you're too noisy.
Well, that's why we have to get this information out as soon as possible.
That's correct.
Get the people aware of it. And they also came after your wife, Nancy, right?
They convicted her. My attorney said they convicted her to coerce me into turning the stuff over. I talked to her, and she said, I'll go to prison first. Sweetheart.
And you were approached by two Secret Service prior to a trip to South and Central America, where you went down to pick up some documents that would implicate a number of interesting people, and came back up here. You shook a surveillance down there, came back up here. You were approached and asked to turn those documents over to the government. You refused, and it was after that that they arrested you and tried you, right?
That's correct.
Okay, folks, that's the story. And how about your wife? Was she released, or would she serve time, or what?
She has a felony conviction. She had to go to a halfway house for 30 days. That concerned us, especially with the fate of Barry Seal going to a federal halfway house. And then she was on an ankle bracelet for 5 months. Following that, 2 weeks ago, she came off of that. Now she's on 3 years supervised release.
Okay, folks, be right back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. No question about it.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And my guest today is Gene Chip Tatum, 25-year deep cover operative, CIA. Before we go back to Chip, I want to just make a few announcements. Kathy O'Brien and Mark Phillips will be at the San Remo Hotel at 7 p.m. on the 5th. That's this coming Tuesday, I believe. And they will be lecturing on mind control out of control. By the way, Kathy is a victim of the MKUltra CIA mind control program. Mark is her friend and associate who came along and rescued her, has been able to deprogram her. They have a book that's available, Transformation of America. It's a must. You should buy it. Send me $18. Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 18000-259, Las Vegas, Nevada. And I'll send you a copy of their book, Transformation of America, Kathy O'Brien. Don't miss this, all you folks living there in Las Vegas. By the way, yesterday I forgot to mention also that I'm sending a letter to all the former FBI agents. There's a lot of good people out there that don't know what's going on. This letter will include summary of information from the Chip Tatum right here on the show and other cases that I've been familiar with. To all former FBI agents, about 7,000 of them, I need money in order to handle this. I anticipate the cost will be between $4,000 and $4,500. If any of you folks can help me out, I'd appreciate it. Send a check to Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 18000-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109. The lower left-hand corner, put a notation, FBI project, so I keep the money separate. Now, we're having a series of six shows with Chip, total of 12 hours, 2 hours for each show, and this audio will be available to you on a package deal. Normally, that would be $120, and the folks here at the studio and the satellite station are making it available to you. That's the American Freedom Network, are making it available to you for $49.95. I urge you to buy this tape, this audio tape of these 12 hour, six shows, and I think we're going to have Chip on a regular basis. I'd like to make a set up a day of each week and have you back, because I have so many things I want to cover, Chip, and we can't seem to get to all of them. But anyway, a 12 hour, six shows, two hours each, $49.95. Call 800-205-6245, 800-205-6245. And for those of you in this first hour, you do not have a shortwave radio. You can buy one through this number, 800-205-6245. And you can listen to the second hour of the show on shortwave. It's broadcast out of WWCR Nashville 12.160 frequency. Chip, back to you. And, gosh, I had a question in mind, and then I got on these announcements, and it skipped me.
Can I hop in with something real quick?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
We had talked about EPIC and the enormous job that they have to do. And let me explain something to you. You know, the levels of corruption at the CIA are, you know, it's sitting at very high levels. But the big problem we have in the drug trafficking and drug trade and drugs coming into the United States, one of the biggest problems we have is the enormity, the number of corrupt individuals in U.S. Customs. Boy, I'll tell you. There aren't many that aren't on the take there. Between them and the way that they work their confidential informant program, it's amazing that they're able to stop anything.
Yes. I had on the Nebraska case, Franklin cover-up case out of that I worked back in the, I'm still working it from the late 80s up to the present time. Paul Benassi told me he's made over 100 trips, drug trips around the world when he was 10, 11, 12 years old. He would fly to L.A., and meet a couple, a man and woman he had never seen before. They'd have five passports and different names for each one of them. And they'd jump on a plane, and they were just dropping drugs all over the world. He also told me that there was a customs agent at LAX in Los Angeles who was dirty, and he would fly out in from Nebraska out to LAX, go to a certain locker with the key, pull it out, and take the drugs back to Omaha, Nebraska on a regular basis. Also, Alicia Owens made this statement. And by the way, Alicia is serving 15 years for perjury, and Paul Benassi has been convicted of child molestation. So that's what they did to them for talking and coming forward and refusing to keep their mouths shut. Chip, what about Bush? We talked about Nixon giving the order to have you folks killed on the Cambodian air raid. What about Bush? What can you tell us about him?
George Bush.
Yeah, George, Jeb, all of them. Whoever.
As General Noriega said on 60 Minutes or 2020 or whatever the other night, George Herbert Walker Bush. I think instead of Herbert Walker, it should be Trouble. His middle name is Trouble. He intends on providing trouble for each and every person who are listening to this program and each and every person sitting in the United States comfortable with their way of life.
And explain that.
He's the man who has masterminded and has put together the heavy movement of drugs during Iran-Contra. He's the man who has masterminded and taken over control of the Reagan White House during at least the 6 years of the Reagan presidency, and then 4 of his own. That's 10 years in complete control, plus a year as the director of CIA. Anyone who thinks that he doesn't isn't a very, very, very powerful man needs to look today at where he goes, who he talks to. He has direct inroads to every leader in the world. He goes to those leaders, he talks to them, he attempts to align them for what will be a new world order, a single government. If they don't align, then they leave this earth.
Or they have a revolution or something, right?
That's correct. Something happened.
You have direct knowledge of Bush's involvement in the drug operation.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
People don't realize it, but George Bush, in the heights of everything going on in the Iran-Contra situation, in 1985, on April 12th, was in Honduras. He was meeting with the president. He met with the president of Colombia. He met with the president of Honduras. And in the meantime, we were building the cocaine kitchens for them. His national security director, Don Gregg, met with me at dinner a week preceding Mr. Bush's arrival, explaining what needed to be done and what had to be in place before he got there.
Don Gregg being the advance man.
That's right.
And he talked to you about Bush coming in, and did he discuss drugs?
He discussed drugs.
What did he say?
It's all in the Tatum Chronicles. It's written down
on the back of the flight plan. Oh, yeah, we better stop right now. How do these people get a hold of Tatum Chronicles?
It's at 1-800-201-7892. 800-201-7892, extension 58. For those who are outside of the United States, I'll give a number in the second hour on how they can get that.
Yeah, let's be sure to do that second hour.
Right.
Okay, what did Don Gregg say about that drug and Ben Bush coming in?
Mr. Gregg, while he was there, passed on a large briefcase of money to be taken to a meeting that was going to be held in Alcatel, Costa Rica, and to be put in the amalgamated account.
Be right back, folks. Ted Gunnison, Intelligence Report.
Join in on the conversation with Ted. Call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest is Chip Tatum, CIA operative, 25 years. Folks, call 800-205-6245 without fail. Get a copy of the tape, audio tapes of this show and other shows, a total of 6 shows, $49.95. And make copies and give them to your friends. It's a fantastic gift to educate people around you. Do not think this is going on. It's something that they can use when they take trips this summer in their car. They can put this tape in and listen to it. So far, we're going to have 12 hours and probably more. Okay, you were talking about Don Gregg, advance man for George Bush, brought a large briefcase of money. Tell us about that.
A large briefcase of money was delivered to us at the embassy in Tegucigalpa. It was to be taken to a meeting in El Acatal, Costa Rica. At that meeting, there would be William Barr, General Noriega, Amir Amnir, Mike Harari, both of the Mossad, Joe Fernandez, CIA, and Felix Rodriguez. The instructions given, and General Alvarez from the Honduran Army, their chief of staff, the instructions given were very basic. Deposited in the amalgamated account in Panama. It was to go to General Noriega.
So it went to Noriega in the end. How much money was there?
From what I understand, there was about $23 million.
And Noriega put it in his bank, and then when we invaded Noriega in 1989, the money was gone, I guess, huh?
Oh, there was a lot more than that gone. We had replaced the Bush administration had, or the Reagan administration, Bush administration, whichever you want to call it, had replaced many of the stores of cash that the cartels had in Noriega's bank with what's called counterfeit superbills. Those superbills were sitting in there, and we took the real money out, and we're using that around the world in operations. The one thing we couldn't allow happen, though, was for all that money to come out and be thrown into the marketplace, and we were afraid that General Noriega would yank that money out and spend it.
And what happened?
Well, we got rid of the owner of the money.
So you had to worry about the counterfeit money.
Pablo Escobar, and I believe... If my memory serves correct, the armies of General Noriega were whisked away from around their Federal Reserve Bank. We emptied the vaults and took Noriega to prison.
This is a Panama invasion in 1989, right?
That's correct.
Folks, I have a video of this. It's $35. You won't believe it. It's American GIs, young American boys, mowing down, killing civilians. They went into homes and burned out the homes and just destroyed them. They were like Nazi stormtroopers. Send $35 to Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 18,259 for this video. You will not believe it. Have you seen this video, Chip?
I haven't, Ted.
Oh, it's unreal.
I'll
I was
have
shocked.
To call in and get that baby.
What?
I'll have to call in and get that baby.
Well, just call me and I'll take care of you on that one. You know, we don't the guests on the show don't have to pay for anything. That's the least I can do for you for getting this information out. Anything more you want to mention about Bush?
Sure, I'd love to mention quite a bit more about Mr. Bush. I guess the quiz would be what is the connection between George Bush and Olof Palme? Olof Palme was the Prime Minister of Sweden who was assassinated in 1986. I think it would be very interesting to the people out there as they hear about neutralizations, and people of the world as they hear about neutralizations, about a meeting that took place between Mr. Palme, Mr. North, and Mr. Don Gregg. One of the things that needed to be done was to get, for all the weapons that were being purchased or built in purchased without serial numbers and so forth, it was to get end-user certificates for all these weapons so that it could be stated they came from a different country than the United States, since the Bolin Amendment didn't allow us to provide weaponry into particular countries. Mr. Palme, Prime Minister of Sweden, was approached. The whole plan was laid out on his lap, and he chose not to participate. He was dead within weeks.
Well, now, wasn't he supposedly killed by mistake by somebody from the Mossad?
He was, from what I understand...
Is that a cover story?
Killed by a South African.
South African.
You're thinking of Mike Harari's mistake in shooting a waiter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how'd they kill him? How'd they eliminate him?
He was shot. I'm pretty sure he was shot.
In the name of national security, right?
In the name of national security. No one could ever know that that's what was going on.
Yeah, they always say, oh, we can't give that information out in the interest of national security. But the real bottom line is money, greed, and, you know, let's take care of me and to heck with you. Anything more you want to mention about George Bush at all?
I think that's just about it for now.
Wow, that's very heavy, Chip. I heard that Bush has been and some of the other top administrative officials have been indicted in one of the Central American countries. Is Costa Rica or where?
Costa Rica didn't indict Mr. Bush. They indicted Oliver North and Joe Fernandez and one other. I'm not sure. Well, several others, but those are the two that I'm sure of that I've read the indictments on. They're persona non grata. If they show up in that country, they'll be arrested for trafficking narcotics.
Oh, is there any way we can get them to go down there?
well, we certainly get people to go in and kidnap people to come here, but I think if we did that, their entourage and their leaders would be very unhappy, and that Costa Rica would become another appendage of the United States real quick.
Well, now, I also have heard through my various sources that Costa Rica is heavily infiltrated with DEA agents, and it's a heavy drug center now in most recent years. Is that right?
Always has been.
And they're being controlled by whom? By the U.S. government.
Well, by someone. Having been out of the system now since 1992, I don't know, but I know that there are a lot of government officials, government people that have retired and gone down there to work. A lot of government people,
and
who are quote retired, I should say.
Beg your pardon?
Who are quote retired?
Yes. And they're actually working in the intelligence community down there and working on the drug operation, you think?
I believe many of them are.
Okay, folks, time for a quick break. Be right back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Nothing was more secret than...
Oh, here's Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum. Chip, we just have about four more minutes on the first hour. I wanted to get into the McCaffrey, General McCaffrey, who is the drug czar appointed by Clinton. We'll do that on the second hour. I have some intelligence information on him that will shock America. And also, you're familiar with how they've shut down radar periodically and said that they had mechanical problems?
Sure.
I have been told by my sources that this is a subterfuge in order to make drops around the country. Is that right?
That's one way. There's other ways, too. I'll tell you about those.
Let's go into that in the second hour, and we'll have more time to discuss it. And, Chip, what about another area I want to get into? Is there something that we can talk for about 3 or 4 minutes now? Because some of these topics that I want to ask you about are going to be much more involved in that.
Well, as you talk about the ways that there are to drop radar, we've built a line of radar across from across the Caribbean all the way across Central America and out into the Pacific. The locations of that line of radar should be able to fend off any flights that come through. But somehow flights are able to come through. That system was set up when I told you about that over 18 tons that was flown all the way from in numerous sorties, in numerous flights by numerous cartels, various cartel members from Colombia into Mexico with the support of the Mexican government regime at the time. And I think we can talk about that in just a minute, too.
Yeah, well, I was specifically referring to was in New York here several months ago, the radar shut down, and they had a problem landing airplanes at the Kennedy Airport and also LaGuardia. And also in Indiana, it's been a common practice situation, also on the West Coast. And I've been told that they shut the radar down, claiming that there's mechanical problems, but actually what they're doing is they're making some critical drops by planes, so there's no record of it. Have you heard about that?
I've heard of instances like that happening, yes, and that's a plausible answer.
So, do you have knowledge of that, personal knowledge?
I have personal knowledge of it in the southern areas, not up in the central U.S.
Well, what do you mean southern areas?
Well, in central United States, you know, there are so many places that it can be dropped where there is no radar. Why go into a huge metro radar zone? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Why get into that particular problem when there are enormous, vast amounts of land in the United States that are non-coverage for radar?
Well, as a pilot, you would know what those areas are, and you would be able to maneuver your way up into the various states and make your drop without being detected. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Real easy. You can buy a little Cobra radar detector and put it in your aircraft, and you'll know whether you're being tracked by radar or not.
And if you are, what do? You go high, low, or you go do a U-turn, or what?
You just go lower. You mask yourself behind some hills or something, and you drop out of that 5,000-foot range, get down into below 500 or below, and no one will catch you.
500 or below, that's pretty low, isn't it?
I never liked to fly the helicopters. I flew higher than I was willing to fall, so I stayed about 10 feet off the ground.
Oh, really?
That's correct. The only thing above the trees were my main rotor blades.
Oh, wow. Well, you must be a fantastic pilot then, huh?
They say I'm one of the best, according to those who were at numerous...
according
hearings.
To Mr. Peepers.
Pardon me?
According to Mr. Peepers.
Peepers and other crew members. That's right.
Are you going to be using that in your civilian life, you think?
I don't think so. Although there is a heavy other countries have asked me to provide training for their pilots on how I fly under radar.
Okay, time for a quick break. We'll be back in the second hour in just a few minutes. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
To contact us, 303-654-9924. And now, here's Ted.
And good morning, all you beautiful people across this great land of ours, the United States of America. And good morning to our folks and our friends up in Canada and down in Mexico. You know, the president's coming down to see you Monday in Mexico, and he's going to talk about, among other things, drugs. That's what we're talking about on the show today. And also to our friends in Central and South America, Africa, Europe, and Asia. Welcome to the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. My guest again today is Chip Tatum, Gene Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA operative who has come forward and telling us like it is. And we just finished our first hour, which was not shortwave, but we are going on into the second hour of this show. And for those of you who would like to hear what happened on the first hour of each of these shows, we are offering a package deal, 12 hours, 6 shows, 2 hours for each show, audio, $49.95, dial 1-800-205-6245. And for our friends who are overseas and where the 100 number does not work, you can fax to 970-587-5450, and that's Johnstown, Colorado. For our friends overseas, and we heard from a friend in England yesterday, we've heard from South Wales, 970-587-5450, Johnstown, Colorado. That'll give you the country and the city code. And for the rest of you, you've got to get these tapes, folks, 800-205-6245. They're a perfect gift for a friend to educate him, her. What a wonderful opportunity when you're driving across country this summer on your vacation to flip one of these tapes in and hear 12 hours of Chip Tatum tell it like it is. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Now, during the first hour, I mentioned we were talking about the invasion of Panama, and I have a video that's available. It's called The Deception, The Panama Deception, and it talks and it shows about how our boys went in and killed civilians, burned out their homes, murdered thousands of civilians and Panamanian soldiers, and had dug big trenches and had mass graves in order to hide the bodies, just like the Nazis did in World War II. And I was asked, I mentioned I have this video, it's an hour and 43 minutes long, and if you want a copy of this video, you can write to Ted Gunderson, Post Office Box 18000, that's 18000-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109, and that's $35 for that video. And Chip, I'll get one to you after the show. I'll get your address again. By the way, I dropped that other package to you yesterday.
Good.
That I told you I'd send to you.
Good. I look forward to getting it.
Yes, it's in the mail right now, as a matter of fact. So, folks, if you want a copy of this Panama Deception, you've got to see it. It's just unbelievable. I never, never thought I'd see American boys, 18, 19, 20-year-old boys, murdering people and just blowing them away. I never thought I'd ever see that. But, of course, let's face it. Right after World War II, our country brought a bunch of Nazis in, scientists and other leaders, and they've infiltrated into our system. And who can say that they didn't infiltrate into the Army? Our whole system has changed. We need to be alert to it. You need to tell your friends about it. Okay, on the first hour with Chip, we were talking about Operation Red Rock again. That was where the United States, including Chip, went in and bombed the Cambodian airport, Cambodian being our friend. President Nixon gave the orders. We talked about, I'm giving a little summary, folks, in order, because you didn't hear the first hour. We talked about how the CIA, when you know too much, they do one or two things. They neutralize you through assassination, or they convict you of a crime, and you've been neutralized after that. And in the Red Rock situation, where they raided the Cambodian airport, there were orders given by President Nixon to kill all the people that participated in the raid. And you take it from there. You wanted to repeat their names on the second.
I did. Thanks, Ted. The members of Team Red Rock and their fates, as written in Team Red Rock, and I hope in history, this has been filed with the Library of Congress, and a copy has been sent to the White House Library. Killed by friendly fire was Super Cop, who was a northeastern United States former intelligence naval officer and Navy SEAL. Super Cop was killed by U.S. F-4 fighters attacking an anti-aircraft artillery site in Cambodia that we had just finished attacking. Chief was an American Indian, Green Beret. Chief was killed by the door guns of a CH-53 Jolly Green at our pickup zone. Cajun from Louisiana was CIA. Cajun was killed by the door guns of a CH-53 Jolly Green at our pickup zone. Killed by enemy fire was the kid, a Vietnamese-American. His folks worked in the embassy. The kid was killed by NVA patrol as Red Rock crossed an open field. those of us who are captured, this is the fate of Team Red Rock
That first group, when you talk about the drop zone, that was where the instructions were given that you should all be blown away after you attacked the airport, and you were being transported to the drop zone, and the people that were transporting you, were they Americans?
They were Montagnard Vietnamese mountain men.
Okay, they were mountain men. And they
trained by the CIA normally.
They what?
They were trained by special forces in the CIA.
And they transported you part way. It was 15 miles to the drop zone, and they'd only taken you a short distance. They stopped. You heard them cracking their rifles. Your sergeant threw a grenade out. They ducked. You went out and eliminated them. Is that it?
That's correct.
Okay.
We interrogated them before we eliminated them, but that way we found out exactly what was going on and what we could expect.
And this is in your chronicles?
Operation Red Rock, the book I just finished.
Okay, how do people get a hold of this?
They would have to send directly to me. It's $24.95. It's only in manuscript form, folks, but I can personalize it for you and sign Operation Red Rock. It's $24.95, and if you'll send that to post care of Chip Tatum or Nancy Tatum, Post Office Box 895-082.
We'll just come back with the address. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. No question about it. Be right back, folks.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest is Gene Chip Tatum. And Chip, you were talking about your men that were killed. Go ahead.
All right, they can get a copy of Operation Red Rock by writing directly to me at Post Office Box 895-082. 895-082, Leesburg, Florida, 34789. That zip again is 34789. My mom just finished her review of the book, folks.
Who did?
My mother.
Yeah?
She's the only person that's read it. She laughed, she cried, and she was mad at the end.
Give us that address again.
Post Office Box, 895-082, Leesburg, Florida, 34789. And that's $24.95.
Just give me that zip again.
34789.
8-9. 20, how much?
$24.95.
Okay, folks, you better get that. Let's get this word out. And go ahead with the men that were killed and tell how they were killed. That were on this mission, Operation Red Rock.
The remainder of the team was captured by the North Vietnamese as we tried to work our way back to North Vietnam through Cambodia. My way was our platoon leader. He was U.S. Army Captain Green Beret. My way was tortured to death by a Chinese officer. His skin was torn from his body because they found the St. Christopher's cross around his neck. He died from exposure, shock, and loss of blood. Bagman, a U.S. Army Green Beret, Bagman died of wounds received from Soviet officers' pistol following torture and interrogations. Cowboy from Texas.
Wait a minute, Chip. The Soviets interrogated him?
The Soviets interrogated him.
Okay, keep going.
Cowboy, Texas, U.S. Army Green Beret. Cowboy was tortured by a Soviet officer and a Chinese officer. He died of suffocation. The way he died of suffocation is they were tied to poles, not given any food or water. The poles were close to the fire. They were severely dehydrated, starving to death, and when they finally asked for something to eat, when Cowboy asked, please, give me something to eat, they cut a chunk out of the thigh of the other person, Flame, who was on the torture poles with him, and shoved it down his throat. He choked to death. Flame, a U.S. Army Green Beret, Flame was killed with Cowboy on the torture post by Soviet and Chinese officers. He was decapitated by a Chinese officer during the interrogation. Snake, U.S. Marines. Snake was tortured and interrogated by the Soviet and Chinese officer. He also died by decapitation. Pablo, Mexican descent, U.S. Navy SEALs. Pablo escaped during torture, but was captured, interrogated, and tortured to death by a Soviet officer. If you folks listen, these are all Soviet officers and Chinese officers doing the interrogations on us, not Vietnamese officers. Haystack from Kansas, U.S. Army Green Beret. Haystack was shot in the abdomen by a Chinese officer. He died of his wounds only minutes after the U.S. Marine Patrol liberated us and began treating his wounds. It was Haystack's heroism that attracted the Marines' attention to us so that they could liberate us. Pop, our platoon sergeant, U.S. Army Green Beret. Pop's actual name was Chuck, was wounded in the chest and head by U.S. Marines. The Marine was not aware that Pop was a U.S. serviceman. They got in a firefight. They saw us running through the jungle as we got out of our cages. He probably did survive his wounds. Colby wouldn't tell me for sure, but he told me at that time he wasn't dead. He was shipped stateside for emergency medical care. And the last member of the team was Highway, or Bulldog. Bulldog was my call sign over there, and I'm speaking to you today.
Okay, you say Colby said that Pop probably survived.
Colby did. Colby gave me the feeling that Pop was absolutely alive and he was fine.
And you have
he was also being held. He too would be held close to the White House through his term.
And do you have any idea what his last name was? Chuck's last name?
I have several names that I'm waiting. I've written, and I'm waiting to see if any of those are him.
You mean you guys were working together on a regular basis? You didn't know each other's last names?
That's the compartmentalization of special operations missions.
That's the tactic they use, huh?
That's correct.
That way, when you get out, there's no way you can go back and recontact them.
There's no corroboration.
No corroboration. Boy, how clever, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And you said that Colby was aware of this. What did Colby say when you confronted him with the information that you were supposed to have been assassinated after the Operation Red Rock?
He said that, yes, we were. It was Nixon's orders. Nixon intended us to. And if I didn't stay in line, I still would be.
He told you if you didn't stay in line, you still would be what, assassinated?
He said, there's nothing I can do to protect you other than ensure Washington that you're fine, you're working with us fine, and you're not going to say anything. You'll be quiet about this.
Did he say whose idea it was to kill all you folks?
It was Nixon's idea. He passed that on to General Haig and to Henry Kissinger. Kissinger and Haig were against it, and it was Kissinger and Haig who finally got the authorization of that routine patrol of Marines to come in across the lines into Cambodia and as they were mapping for a major offensive and liberate us.
Was that a patrol of Marines specifically sent across to try to locate you?
That's correct.
And what about these mountain men? How many of them were there?
The Montagnards?
Yes.
There were six of them to begin with, but there were only two of them when they were driving the truck out. And those are the two that we eliminated pretty short order.
Well, why would they just assign two to eliminate 13?
Well, after 13 have been through the type of mission that we've been through, we were rag-tired, we were beat. It wasn't going to be hard to take an AK-47 and wipe everyone out sitting in the back of a truck.
Okay. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. No question about it. Tatum, and I want to go back just very briefly, Chip, and review the first hour for those on the second hour who did not hear it. Folks, we talked about how they shut down the radar. Radar can be avoided during these drug drops. We talked about how the 18 tons of cocaine was allowed to slip through in the United States with the knowledge of the CIA through Mexico. We talked about a meeting that Bush attended April the 12th, 1985, in Honduras. His advance man, Don Gregg, met with Chip, and Gregg passed a briefcase full of money delivered to the embassy, and it was the money was to be taken to William Barr and other William Barr, former Attorney General of the United States. The instructions given to Bush and we talked about the Prime Minister of Sweden, how he was eliminated. Because Olof Palme, is that his name?
Olof Palme, that's correct.
Yeah, he was eliminated because he wouldn't play ball with George Bush at all. We talked about Ollie North and Don Gregg having meetings, and we talked about the radar line that's been built across the Pacific and around Central and South America. There's no reason we cannot stop the drugs from flowing into this country. Is there anything else you want to mention that we talked about in the first hour, Chip?
No reason whatsoever. I would like to say on the Team Red Rock item, Colby was also against this, and he was the point man who had to do the on-site planning for the mission, the day-to-day planning. He knew, like he told me, he knew that two Montagnards wouldn't have a chance against us. That's why only two were put there. However, it was Haig's job to convince the president that two would be sufficient.
So the president, President Nixon, knew that much detail about the operation. He did not delegate it then, huh?
He did not delegate it. That was his baby.
Yeah, it was his baby. So Colby knew that you were going to be able to make it out of that.
That's right.
Well, my hat's off to Colby, who was obviously murdered by elements unknown, probably tied into the government. So anything else you want to mention about Operation Red Rock?
No, I'm glad I'm here. I'm happy to be alive.
I guess you are, and you're very fortunate, and thank goodness that you're able to come forward now and expose these nefarious activities on the part of the U.S. intelligence. You know, I want to make it very clear, folks, that there's a lot of good people out there. I mean, look at Chip, and what a great American he is. Rambo, John Wayne, all wrapped up in one. And there's a lot of good people in the service, in the CIA and the FBI and DEA and, yeah, ATF, and I'm sure there's some good ones in customs and so forth. But their hands are tied because our system has been infiltrated at the very top, right up to the White House. And look at Colby. His hands were tied. He tried, and Haig, General Haig, and Henry Kissinger, they tried to talk Nixon out of this. He would not be talked out of it. So they have to follow their orders. And that's basically what the problem is in this country today, isn't it, Chip?
That's right. The orders come from above. Who do you tell?
Yeah, who do you tell, and what do? You have to follow them or you're dead.
That's correct.
Or they send you to jail and discredit you. We need to get into some other areas, Chip. By the way, I'm going to have you back on a regular basis. How about once a week?
That would be nice.
Yeah, because there's so much we can talk about that we haven't touched on that I want to ask you about. We need to dig this out and make it available to the American people. Chip, is there anything more that you want to mention about radar, about Bush on the second hour, about Colby, about Kissinger, about General Haig? And I think I mentioned on one of the other shows I interviewed Haig at the White House on one occasion in connection with a possible criminal violation. And believe it or not, Chip, I actually read him his rights.
He needs them read.
And, you know, I attended a State Department dinner after I retired in Washington, D.C., and I went up and said, hey, General Haig, you remember me? He looked at me and says, oh, yes. He says, are you going to have me indicted? And anyway, we'll talk about that some other time. This is your show, not mine. What about this recruiting of civilians? That's an area that I find very fascinating. You know, back in the early 80s, there was a presidential directive issued that allowed the CIA to infiltrate or be reassigned, I guess, on a sub rosa covert basis in other agencies for cover. And then if they had an assignment, they were pulled out of, say, the Department of Energy or pulled out of the Pentagon or whatever the case might be, and used for their assignment. But at the same time, this presidential directive allowed the CIA and other intelligence agencies, including the FBI, of course, to use civilians for some of their dirty work. Are you familiar with that?
Sure. I headed up what's called proprietary companies, where we would hire and contract in civilians to do the job.
Okay, let's get back in. It seems like the time runs out on us. As soon as we get into a subject, we have the music. Okay, the music. We'll be right back. Coach Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back, and my guest is Chip Tatum. Chip, a 25-year veteran CIA deep cover. Chip, somebody called in during the break and want to know what the public can do to help you locate Chuck.
I don't know that the public can do much. I'm doing quite a bit now, and I think that I've narrowed it down to six individuals, and I'm sure that one of these is Chuck.
Okay, well, that's good. And if you locate him, ask him if he wants to go on the show.
You bet I will.
And let's hope he's still alive. What about, going back to this operation, we got a caller on the line, but I'll come right back to you, John, in Colorado, but I want to ask a couple questions before I forget it. It slipped by my mind. You did not know the names of any of these people on Operation Red Rock, did you?
Nope.
You didn't know their first names either?
Well, I go over the first names of several of these in the book.
Okay. So there's no way of getting a hold of their relatives or their loved ones and telling them what happened to them?
No way that I'm aware of. I know my family was notified that I was a KIA initially.
KIA meaning?
Killed in action. So,
killed in action.
So I believe that they, too, were notified.
So they were notified of that, but they don't know the circumstances or the details. Right?
That's right.
Okay, if any of you folks have any idea who these people might be, give me your address, your phone number, whatever, Chip. If anybody happens to think that it might be somebody, one of their relatives, in other words.
Sure, my address is P.O. Box 895-082, Leesburg, Florida, 34789.
Okay, do you, I've got a suggestion for you, Chip. Why don't we put you in touch with a real professional artist who can do artist conceptions of each one of these people and put it in your book?
Well, that would be pretty nice.
Okay, this is a little investigative technique that I've used in the past.
Sure.
Let's talk about that after the show. Also, some other things I want to talk to you about. I've got a network of people that I can put you in touch with that might be able to help you also.
Great.
Okay, now, John from Colorado. Hi, John.
Hi, gentlemen. This is really great.
Where are you from, Colorado, John?
Oh, I'm from the Denver area.
Denver, okay.
Real quick, Chip, this isn't my main question, but when you guys are out there in the field in your operations, why don't you secretly disclose to each other who you are just for each other's protection?
The time that we spent together was about 2 weeks. The 2 weeks was a very intensified training. We know, having been working with the company and with others, there probably isn't a need to. We did put things in place back in at headquarters with another person to help us through. So my way suspected what was going on and took care of that for us.
I see. Okay, here's my question. Are you familiar with the methodology of substituting for people with synthetic anatomatrons or robotrons?
No.
Like, I guess... Jimmy Carter supposedly has an anatomatron, a synthetic anatomatron, which is a DNA-contrived, organic, grown material that's a duplication of him.
A double?
Uh-huh.
Sure. A lot of leaders have doubles that travel around while they sit in meetings, actual meetings. I don't know if they're to that level or that technology, but, you know, science comes out and says we've finally cloned sheep, it means the government has known about that technique for many, many, many years.
Right. Well, that's my understanding, is that Jimmy Carter was cloned with a synthetic substitute that was actually grown in a laboratory. It's interesting. The other question is, are you familiar at all with the helicopter, since you're a helicopter pilot, with the presidential helicopter that blew up with the four... agents in it?
This president has had a lot of problems with his helicopters. I'm well aware of that.
And airplanes.
that's correct, with airplanes, C-130, and actually there have been two presidential helicopters that have gone down in this administration.
Are you aware of the one that killed four of his eight bodyguards?
I'm not sure how many people and who was on, but I am aware of two that have gone down, two of the Marine helicopters.
Where did they go down, Chip?
One went down on a test flight in the Virginia area. The other, I'm not sure. I was in prison that time. A friend had told me, an investigative friend, over the phone.
I think this was April of 92 is the one I'm thinking of. It was in the papers.
Well, if any of you Secret Service agents are out there listening and you're flying around in Bill Clinton's helicopters, you better take precautions and be alert and be aware that something could very easily happen to you.
If they told me to get on Marine One, I'd ask for an alternative. Can I drive?
Yeah, right.
What do you think about Shashkash Dili? You have any? Is he tied into any of this? Chief of Staff?
Yeah. When you become the Chief of Staff, it's a very political position. You have to become a puppet.
Well, just like a pal, right?
Sure. You don't get in that position just because you're the best general there is. That's not true at all. You get in that position because you're the one who the president feels he can get the most production out of.
And he can tell what to do without getting any back talk.
That's right.
But, like, was he ever tied in with Bush and some of these drug operations or anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well,
he has to be a New World Order man, though.
Oh, yes. If he's a Chief of Staff, Joint Chief of Staff, he is a New World Order man.
As is Albright, Secretary of State.
Who didn't know of her ancestry before.
Right.
remember to mention Henry Hyde again. I think that's very interesting.
Okay, Henry Hyde. Let's talk about Henry Hyde.
I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, all right. Thanks, John from Colorado, Denver. Talk about Henry Hyde. Go ahead. We've already talked about him on the show earlier. A congressman from Illinois who was the man that kept records of the black ops operation, drugs and guns and so forth for the CIA, right?
That's correct. Uncle Henry, Mr. Hyde is the one who sets up the funding accounts for the proprietary companies. We carried a $250,000 signature line of credit so that we could, at any time, pull cash out to pay the civilian employees, the contractors, to provide their services.
And so, okay, you had to, did you have to pull money out in order to pay for the civilian contractors?
That's correct. I'd pull it out on a signature loan, and within a week it would be replaced.
It'd be paid, in other words.
That's right.
And what about your paperwork? Where did it go?
What paperwork?
Did you just call Henry Hyde on the phone and say, Henry, I just did this, or what? How'd you handle that?
No, there was an attorney in Rochester, New York, that all of our documentation went into. He was actually the person who set up the companies and oversaw the companies.
You want to mention the attorney's name?
Sure, Ben Whitaker.
Ben Whitaker, huh? And he's a Syracuse?
Rochester.
Oh, Rochester. Time for a quick break, folks. We'll be right back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Views expressed on this show are those of the persons on the air only, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or advertisers.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Oh, in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover operative. Folks, call 1-800-205-6245, send $49.95 into American Freedom Network for 12 hours of interviews between me and Chip. He's giving you information. You need to take it. Put it on a video, which we're going to do for you. Get it out to your friends. Make copies. What a wonderful gift. I mean, it's educational. You've got to know what's going on. It's important that we educate each other. Also, folks, I am in the process of trying to do something about the FBI. It's been corrupted, obviously, as other agencies have. And I'm setting up a new foundation. It's called Restore the FBI Foundation. And I need your financial help. And I'm asking everybody listening, just send me a dollar. We got 3 million people out there. Send me a dollar. That'll be enough for me to get these letters. I want to get a letter out to every ex-FBI agent. There's more than 7,000. It's going to run me between $4,000 and $4,500, and I need your help to do it. So send me a check today to Ted Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, Post Office Box 18,000. That's 1-800-259. Las Vegas, Nevada, 89109. Okay, Chip, did you have anything else you wanted to cover or wanted to mention? We need to go back and talk about Mr. Whitaker. So you would take out, $50,000, give it to a civilian. What would his assignment be?
Whatever the assignment was, our archer teams were five-man teams, including me. I was the fifth man. The pay was $50,000 permission to complete the mission, whatever that mission was. Some of them were half that. Some were $25,000 a mission. To give you an example of one of the missions they had, there was a man called Ramon Navarro who was in charge of setting up all the cocaine kitchens in Central America for Bush and North. I go through that with the documents in the Tatum Chronicles, and we'll give a number later for that, but these documents are there. I mean, they hang these guys. Ramon Navarro was approached by an archer team late at night, the night before he was to go and testify in one of the collateral Noriega trials going on. Unfortunately, he died in an accident the night before.
Well, auto accident?
An auto accident. The archer team was only paid $25,000 for that auto accident.
Now, what's an archer team? Is that CIA people? Is that you? Or is that civilians?
That's members of OSG-2 who are intelligence officers or civilians, whoever we put together for the team.
So you would, how would you get paid?
Right out of the account.
I mean, would you be given $25,000 for each assignment or what?
That's correct. My job was to get them there.
And so your 5 times 25, so figure roughly 100 and what, $25,000?
$125,000 on that particular mission, but most missions that were over a two-day mission were paid, the pay was $50,000.
Well, so the guys are making good money while they're killing people.
Well, as long as they had several missions, you know, sometimes there was only a couple missions per team. Yeah, the number of teams we had around the world were enormous. There was only one person that I ever flew twice.
How much manpower did you have around the world to draw on?
Each operative in the OSG had their own intelligence network and contract agents. We would contact that operative and say, we're coming to your area. This is what we need, and he would set that up.
I have heard as many as 3,000 professionally trained assassins around the world.
During the Bush and Reagan administrations, if you'll recall, there wasn't much terrorism in the United States as we see it today. There's a reason for that. We kept them busy. We kept them trained. You know, a terrorist needs to have their hands busy and their minds busy. Otherwise, they're going to be doing deeds that we don't care for. This administration doesn't believe in doing that, so what they're seeing is a lot of these highly trained people disgruntled doing things in the world. They talk about the number of terrorist attacks in the world being down. That's true, but the number in the United States is up.
Yes, I think that they're using a lot of these provocateurs and these terrorist attacks in order to make the militia look bad. Let's talk about West Texas, for example. They just gave up today, the Republic of Texas. I would wager anybody that they had an agent provocateurian among those people. What do you think about that?
I believe that's a very, very plausible explanation for what's going on.
And the reason being, in order to give the militia a black eye, the Patriot Movement a black eye.
We received a call, I believe, last week concerning one of the members of this Republic of Texas, saying he knew the man and he's just not the man he knew. Perhaps he's on some scopolamine or something.
Well, you say we received a call. What do you mean?
During one of the radio shows.
Yeah, right. Okay, on this radio show.
That's right.
Well, let's go more into detail about this Archer team. How would you comprise an Archer team? What would they comprise of? A five-man team?
It's a four-man Archer team. Depending on the mission, you would have a recon man, at least two snipers or two assassins. Depending on if that's what you're going to do. If you're not going to assassinate, then you don't need those. So you need just... Sometimes we delivered computer technicians into other countries to collect data, to move financial accounts around so that certain leaders wouldn't have access to their money. And we told them, you know, if you want your money, do what we say. They did.
So an Archer team could receive any assignment, and everybody's highly specialized trained. Were these Archer teams, were they contract people like civilians, or were they actually trained CIA
persons? Some of them were trained Mossad agents. Some of them were trained British intelligence agents. Some were Danish intelligence agents. The more notorious were Turkish intelligence.
Well, at $25,000 and $50,000 per assignment, I imagine they were standing in line to get out there, weren't they?
Well, that's it. They couldn't ask to come. They had to be invited.
Okay. That Gunnison Intelligence Report. Be right back, folks. No question about it.
And now, here's Ted.
And we're back, folks. My guest is Chip Tatum. Chip, we have about three or four more minutes left. Archer team, four men. They can be civilians or members of the company, right?
Members of OSG, which is an international intelligence network.
International intelligence network. Including some of our allies, Turkey, Holland, and so forth. Did you have any Scandinavians involved in this?
Yes, one called the Viking, as a matter of fact, codenamed the Viking.
Was he Norwegian, Swedish, Danish?
Norwegian, very good friend.
Oh, well, I'm Norwegian, that's why I was wondering about that. And how would you receive your orders? I mean, would somebody hand you a piece of paper, or would they call you and say, hey, go to such and such a place and be briefed?
On occasion, they were couriered into us. We were always The commanders of the OSGs were always positioned in a place where they had access to, where we had access to secure lines. So the courier would come in and we would contact the office.
And they would say, contact the office, you'd contact the office, be given your assignment. And who would put the teams together? Like you would only work with somebody for a couple of weeks, then you'd, they'd split you off, decompartmentalize you, you wouldn't know the man's last name.
Well, depending on where the operation was, say if it was in Colombia, we would have our Colombian desk officer take care of it from there. He would assign the teams. I would assign the aviation support to those teams, and we'd start the mission.
And did he have access to, did he know, say, 3,000 men around the world he could call upon?
He knew of the people in his arena, of the network that he had set up. That's who he would assign on the mission. If the mission were into Germany, we would have a man in Germany. He would know who his network was, who he would work with. We were very compartmentalized in all that we did. I know the desk officers, the men in charge, the area supervisors of these specific areas. They know who their network is, their networks are. We had what's called interface, which was the position that everything would go through, so that dissemination wasn't made down through. It was a fail stop.
Well, but you still didn't know their last name. Just knew them by a haystack, or
Now that was during Vietnam. That's something completely different. During the OSG arenas, yes, I knew the last names of the people I was dealing with, but I didn't know the names and the last names of the people that were assigned by the desk officers.
Yes. But when you get together, would you exchange that information?
No.
Okay. Regulations, right? You go on your assignment, and at what stage would you be paid?
Right up front.
Right up front. So you get $25,000 on the front end.
That's correct.
What'd you do with your money?
Tucked it away.
Is that what you're living on now?
Absolutely not. The government took it.
Give it away, and then they take it away. Huh?
Don't put it in the banks.
Well, you should put it in the shoebox and put it under the bed then, right?
Did that, too.
Well, they found that, too, didn't they?
That's right.
When they searched it.
They took the drywall off the walls of the home looking for it.
Did they go out in the yard with the, what do they call it, to look for metal and look, see if you had a metal box buried out there?
And looking for the PVC pipe, yes, they did.
Oh. Who did this, the FBI?
The agency did.
Oh, the agency did, huh? This is at the time you were arrested? You said you were arrested by the FBI, though.
This was sometime since I had been arrested, not initially. I mean, the house was given back to us. The money for the house, when it was sold, was offered to us, the $60,000 for a $280,000 house, but it was only worth $60,000 in the auction because it was so torn apart.
Oh, Chip, we're going to have to continue this Monday. Great to have you on the show again, folks. Tune in Monday. We'll be right back in 3 days.
To the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. To contact us, write the Ted L. Gunderson Intelligence Report, P.O. Box 18000-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89114. We're on the internet at www.amerifree.com, www.amerifree.com. Tired of your shortwave radio acting up or breaking down? You need a Sanjian shortwave radio. The Sanjian line of shortwave is simply the best, and the American Freedom Network has them. For a basic, full-frequency shortwave, try an ATS-808 for $119.99 plus shipping. For a shortwave with sideband adjustment for listening to ham radio, choose the ATS-818 for $159.99 plus shipping, or the ATS-818CS that has a time tape recorder for $199.99 plus shipping. But if you want the best radio out there, we offer the Sanjian ATS-909. This state-of-the-art radio has AM, FM, longwave, the full shortwave spectrum, as well as digital sideband adjustment using the highest quality components. Along with other features, the 909 is a great value for only $274.99 plus shipping. So order yours today at 1-800-205-6245. That's the Sanjian line of shortwave radios available at the American Freedom Network at 1-800-205-6245. We are closed caption for the politically impaired. KHNC Johnstown, KTMG Deer Trail.
Around the world, around the clock, this is UPI News. State officials say one of the Republic of Texas members who's been holding out in a standoff walked out this morning and was arrested without incident. But for now, the standoff continues. There are some 11 or 12 other members of the Republic of Texas group holed up near Fort Davis. The group advocates Texas separate from the rest of the country. The standoff is in its sixth day. President Clinton took part in today's dedication of the FDR Memorial.
Standing at the FDR Memorial with the help of crutches that he needs only temporarily, Mr. Clinton praised a president whose infirmity was permanent, but conquered.
He said over and over again in different ways that we had only to fear fear itself. We did not have to be afraid of pain or adversity or failure, for all those could be overcome. He knew that, of course, because that is exactly what he did.
Mr. Clinton described Roosevelt as a master politician, a magnificent commander-in-chief, and the...